Are there any problems in the meditation now? It's very simple. You do the holy breath first, then you repeat the holy name, you see the light and hear the sound current. Don't you do that? Well, I've been doing it 8 hours a day, dear lady, for nearly 20 odd years. That's why we still get just something to prop it up.
I get on the edge of the bed, I turn around and get on the floor, and I lay on my back.
Oh, why? What's that say?
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I roll up the blanket.
I roll up the blanket to take something that will prop it up, pull it on.
Until
you get ready and hear the sound is good, you have to do it. Yeah. First you'll hear body sounds. The first sounds you hear is the bodily sounds. Then there's a frequency above that that sounds like a high-pitched whine. That is the carrier frequency or the extrasensory frequency that you lock your mind into. It's that frequency the telepathic waves flow. That's the one you got to link into. They come in at that frequency. No, they're not no earthly tunes. Yeah, it is music. It's actual music. When you hear it, inside, you're hearing music.
Oh, that's why I was
wondering. Yeah,
you're...
Well, if you just hear it, you're fortunate. Imagine if you make the effort to hear it all the time. My dear lady, it took me 10 years to hear the bells. You're fortunate. I practiced for 10 years that technique to hear the bells.
Yeah.
And I know a man who was hearing it from the left side for 10 years. It took him a long time to shift it over to the right side. It's on your right.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're hearing it and it's on the right side, it's okay. Don't worry in the position with it.
What are they dreaming about the levitating? You are. Well, the priests I was carrying on, zooming all around, and showing all the priests that I know.
Well, the thing is this, when you meditate, your spiritual experiences are greater. You do get some in dreams, but you want to go past the dreams where you can actually experience them in meditation. No, you see, you start off with dreams. You have to have some type of dream to get your mind start on the path. There comes a time when you go past the dreams, that your consciousness is working from inside. So on the inside part where you're conscious, in order that your mind is not a victim of hallucinations, there you have to keep repeating the holy name. An initiate is already initiated, and if he's going to have the name of God, anything that is of any type of entity or any level, after 5 minutes, you repeat the holy name. If it stays after 5 minutes, you rest assured that's a master. If he can stay in that perimeter 5 minutes after you repeat the holy name, he's a master. If he can't stay 5 minutes, he's not a master, no matter what you see. See, the masters tell us one simple thing. If they come when you are meditating, don't trust them either. Yeah. If you see anyone, if you see Jesus, don't believe it until you put him to the test. Repeat the holy name 5 minutes and see if he stand up there. If he can stand up in the presence of the holy name for 5 minutes and let you see his body from toe to head, both feet, then you're looking at the real master. Otherwise, you're seeing a hallucination. If he can't stay there for 5 minutes in the presence of the holy name and let you see the whole body, not one foot in front of the other, or one hand in front of the other, if he does this, or does like this, or has a robe that covers his feet, it's all hallucination. You want the truth. If you want the truth, use the rules. The holy name is there to get rid of them once and for all. And if you've got a resurrected body, if you really attain God, he's going to show it to you. And you're going to find out where the wounds are really are in that body. He's not going to pull no trick. Equally, any true master like Buddha or any one of these men, if they come to really give you some experience, they are going to show you 100% themselves. They don't need to be in no medium. That would be a violation in the first place to come down and talk to a medium. It's in your scriptures. When King Saul went to the psychic of Endor, he wore a disguise, and in that disguise, she called up the prophet Samuel, and Samuel exposed them, because this is a violation. That is using another person's ectoplasm. It's like pirating your mind. It's hijacked.
He only came because Saul was his disciple.
Right.
The only reason.
And he admonished or disciplined Saul and exposed Saul to the psychic. But he never allowed the psychic to use him, or he would never use the psychic's body. He materialized in the room. See, a master is not going to play around. He's going to, in fact, he's going to tell him off right there. And the worst thing could happen to the psychic, he can turn off her energies for her. She'll never be able to see no more in those realms. It's strictly about what it is. So when a person say they're seeing Lord Jesus, we want to be certain that he's really seen Lord Jesus. And how does he see it? Does he see a half a body, or a throat, or a head, or a full body? So the initiate is not taking any chances. He can't afford to take chances. He's been fooled too long on this path of many books around the subject to find out if it's a thought form acting as Jesus, or if he's having experiences from a supersensory state that appears to be giving him the answer. So the master says, use the holy name of God, and if he can stay, even he, the master, can stay, any one of them can stand up 5 minutes in the presence of that name, then he really is there. My wife will tell you a story of a man who is an initiate who went around playing around. He lives in Houston, and this is a very interesting story.
Even before that, our master had an accident, broken leg, and he had a vision of, and the doctors at the hospital kept insisting that he had to eat meat in order to recuperate. It was a very, very severe accident. And so he was praying about it, and he saw his master's radiant form appear to him, and his form said, well, these were very unusual circumstances, so he would allow him to eat meat.
Now, he did the holy name for 5 minutes, and it's just did. So he wrote his master, and he said, "Master, it was just so much like you." He said, "It was like you looked and you appeared to me." And he said, "But you disappeared when I said the holy name." And he said, "I just can't believe that you tell me I could eat meat. Was it really you?" Master wrote back and said, "No, indeed. That under no circumstances are the rules changed." And he said, "I did not appear to you. That was call or Satan or the adversary, whatever you want to call it, to protect me." But this fella, so even the masters, Jesus was tested, Satan appeared in him. So you have to be tested in order to prove that you can do these things or will do them. But how would you ever know whether you really do or not? But this fella in Houston wanted to visit with some other meditation group, so he'd heard of one. He went to visit. While they were meditating, he began to feel very peculiar and kind of sick or funny and a pulling and roaring, and he told him that he couldn't recognize as anything that he could feel in meditation. It was just an uneasy, queasy feeling, though. So he started doing the holy name, and it relieved. He'd relax and start enjoying meditation, and he'd come again, and he'd do the holy name again. Well, when the meditation was over, he chatted with a few people and started to leave, and the fellow that had led the meditation said, "Say, wait a minute, come back here, I want to talk to you." He said, "Wait till I get through here. Wait till everybody else leaves." So he did. This man came over and said, "I want to know what it is you do. I couldn't enter your consciousness at all. I couldn't get in there and get anything." And this Lamont said, "What do you mean enter my consciousness? No, I do it all the time. But I, in anyone's consciousness, to get out what I want, what I need." And so the mind said, "Well, I'm going to tell you something. And if you're playing games, you won't learn about God, well, then I'll talk to you." So the mind went on home. And his wife had to open the door. I don't know. He lost his key or something, other, you know. And so she had to open the door for him. And he came in and she said, "Lamont, what's that thing over your head?" "What do you mean over my head?" You know, she said, "Well, it's like a little great spot up over your head." She said, "Uh-oh, I'll fix him." So he went and sat down, started saying the holy name. And he said, "What, about 15 minutes?" And then he said he'd wait a bit. He decided everything was all right, so he went on upstairs. Well, that was a Wednesday night. Well, we had to go to Houston unexpectedly, so we got in Friday night, and they called a meeting. He called this man to invite him over to the meeting. The man said he couldn't come Saturday night, but he'd come Sunday morning. And so Lamont was just hanging over our heads, so we were eating supper, you know, and he was talking to the man who couldn't help but hear everything that was said, and he asked him, "Why did he leave so early the other night?" But anyway, after he got through the conversation, he told us what he meant. The man knew what he meant as soon as he said that. He said, "Well, I thought I'd give you time to get home and get in bed, and then I'd try to enter your consciousness." And he said that he was thrown back so hard that he hit his thigh off the chair 3 times, and he just was so tired, and he had to go to bed himself. He couldn't concentrate anymore to try to do that. So Sunday came, Sunday morning, and I was in the kitchen having to type some letters while they were doing meditation. This man got there just when meditation started, and he sat down opposite that and just like that. He was gone the whole time. And when he woke up, "What happened? What happened? Oh, it's all my karma. Oh my God, what I've been doing to people. Oh, what I've got to pay for. Tell me what you did to me. What happened? What you did?" So he started asking his dad a whole lot of questions. Now, he's a good man. He didn't know, really, he didn't know any better. He thought as long as he could do something, he had a right to do. And he's been paying some pretty heavy karma. Like a 17-year-old boy was hit and killed. Not to ask that. Now, we don't know what brought that on. The boy and all too, but kind of tore him up. And with anybody, but I mean, I don't know. I didn't talk to him after that. Did he seem to feel like that was involved with what he was doing? And he's waiting for Miss Richie. But this Lamont said, he said, well, he said, I really didn't appreciate initiation and what the holy name can mean and how the master will protect you. First in the Catholic Church, what do you do? In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. You know, and that helps. That's a sign of power, but you should do it for 5 minutes. You know, some people use, will you acknowledge that the Christ, not Jesus, but that the Christ has been born in the flesh, the Son in the flesh. Of course, it is the Christ consciousness that manifests in the Master. And these beings of other realms, they will not acknowledge that. In fact, my own son had a tremendous experience, my youngest son. One night, he had been watching TV. It just had flipped off the light, and he had not gone to bed. I mean, gone to sleep. And he said he was trying to arrange the colors and one thing or another, and just all of a sudden he saw this being standing there in the room. And he said, the most wonderful, lovely fragrance was going out. And he felt sort of a drawing sensation and so on, and then he remembered an experience I had had years before I told him about, and I told him to keep doing checks and things. At first he was just enjoying this delightful presence, you know, and thought, oh, he's going to be blessed with something really beautiful and wonderful. And then all of a sudden he remembered this testing bit, and he started testing. And in just a moment, he said it turned into the most powerful thing. He said, you cannot imagine. He said, you simply cannot imagine how foul that smells. And unfortunately, he didn't have to see a terrible apparition that was taken away. We're not trying to frighten you by any of these things, but we have to meet up with some of our old thought forms too, you know, and our old patterns and emotional patterns and all too, and maybe meditation and love that this takes us.
What was it?
Well, I didn't have the experience. And
it was a negative force?
Yes, it was a negative force. And,
there's another instant in the same night there was a Hawaiian kahuna was trying.
The same time we went to a send out the model to tell us about the success. That Friday night we got there, this man from Hawaii who had supposedly had studied with the Hunas in Hawaii, and I don't know, see, down was sitting like this, and I was sitting to his right, and the man was sitting right over about where you're sitting, and so he had been studying with this man who would do this. And in the consciousness. Also, he went to that meditation group. So he got himself all fixed and he started concentrating, you know. And he couldn't look at Adana, the light was too dazzling, so he decided to concentrate on me. So I was sitting there and I noticed he, you know, I could. Exactly. First thing you know, he starts going over. And come up, you know, and he said that, and he starts concentrating. So finally, I thought, well, gee, you know, I'll turn that person somewhere. So finally, he had to get up and go outside. He just said,
he went out and laid down in their truck and went to sleep.
John, what about when you close your eyes and you slid it like and just hurry, like it's exploding, like a flame. And it's all like a palliative spoke. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Beautiful design,
mm-hmm.
And then in the middle is this blue.
That's what you're looking for. You're looking for the blue light inside, and the gold rings around it. And inside is a five-pointed white star, like a dove descending. It's in that five-pointed white star the masters come true. They have to come through that state.
And you feel a current, you feel like you want to get on that current and go, or you have to go into that.
But you don't want to go until you test it. Right, you got tested. You can't even trust your best friend in there.
But when you're doing that, you're still saying, oh yeah.
You know, in the army used to say, don't walk over the ground unless you step on a landmine. So you have to give you a thing to test along, you know, to walk. So it's the same thing. You got lots of landmines in there.
Like a world.
Yeah, so. You see the story of Odysseus and the sailors? You heard that story? Right. The sirens are these forces who try to pull you down into the lower realm. And sometimes the master, they want to use the energy of your body. So the master, sometimes they would actually put a blinker that you don't see nothing inside it. You say, well, Jesus, I meditate all these years, I don't see anything. You're fortunate because sometimes your subconscious mind is so weak it will be pulled down. So you have to have some way to test it all the way. And all the masters say, you must make sure that when you test it right up to the last moment when you're face to face with God, even then, repeat his name. Because you don't have any guarantee. Yes, if it explodes, if it stays there and comes out in the form of any teacher, they would either have to be genuine. It has to be a genuine experience. Yogananda used to say this, if Thomas could see Jesus, he said, why can't we see it? So why are we worrying about trying to kid ourselves? Why don't we make up our mind and accept the truth that this is an actual science and go ahead and use it? You know, he wouldn't have tolerated talking with Jesus. He wants to see Jesus. In fact, he used to have every day the masters would materialize and talk to him in a little garden that he had. And he used to tell the disciples, don't come near that garden while he's meditating. And one boy used to be there to keep away the people, and he was not allowed to see. The master would block him so he couldn't see. But he heard the two-way conversation and the going on in the garden all the time. So he said to the master, he says, Master, you're very fortunate. All the masters can materialize and talk to you. The master says, yes, he says, but I still don't trust him.
So the Lord of creation, see, is just one away from God. And he's going to keep you in this creation if he can. So he can manifest right up to the very last.
You see, the negative pole wants to create just like the positive pole. And it's what they call a carbon process. You know, you have a carbon copy, it's never like the original. So no matter how it tries, it'll still be a carbon copy, it'll never be the original. So that particular function in your mechanism tries to trick you. So God himself would not trick you, so God has already built all the safety factors in it with his holy name. And with his name, he has created everything. That's why when you repeat the holy name, outwardly you're taking it in vain, because there's nothing here you can create with it that he didn't already create. See, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, thou shalt hallow it. So by repeating it inwardly, you are hallowing it, because that would free you now from any mental makeup that the mind would try to trick you in believing that it's that. So you have a tremendous safety factor locked up in the holy name. Not to be fooled.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Jesus kept repeating, hallowed be thy name. He knew he had to hallow. Now, he was standing when they brought the man who was obsessed by spirits. And even before he did anything, the spirit says, we know who you are. They are automatically recognized. We know who you are. Let us go. Because he was already cycling the holy name in his consciousness. They could not stand the vibration. They'd have to go. So what did it took? They went out into the animal kingdom. And then into the pigs. They had to be shunted out. They had to let go of the men. You just keep on, you have to keep repeating the holy name.
You wake up and you say, yeah.
Keep on holding in.
Good thing to have a clock by you that you can see. Yes.
For the 5 minutes that you're...
5 minutes. Oh, well, I'm careful because you can get so entranced looking at something that...
No, I don't
you think that it. You're doing it, you know, yeah. And have done it 5 minutes. You really haven't.
You're not really awake.
You have to get yourself to where you will look, you will check.
Mm-hmm.
Look,
no wonder this man is so frightened. If he's been meditating for 13 years, he doesn't have this protection. You see what I mean? I'm trying to understand because you told me to stay in everything I was in. But it's a little difficult because I know that my meditation has been so much, it's not like night and day, it's so much better, you know what I mean? And I can't say anything.
But you don't go away. The thing is, let me point out something. Because you're an initiate and you're doing the meditation and the holy name inside, join in the group but do it. Do your own personal meditation. But let me point out something. When that man came, that my wife described, that to the room that day, he came in late and sat down. Whatever he was attempting to do, my meditation is just to repeat the holy name, that's all I do inside. If he had any awareness, whatever was working through him, it couldn't stay longer than 5 minutes because it automatically rebounded him. That's why he was knocked out into that state immediately to face his karma. Because this is what happens. This consciousness sends you back to where it comes, the energy comes from. So it automatically goes back. If the man is using, wherever you are, if you're meditating and if the group is experiencing negative experiences with the best of intention, that doesn't say that they're deliberately trying to do it, but they don't know it, you're doing them a wonderful service because that will help to recycle them. Equally true, when I was meditating, the man came in and automatically he saw all the karma start coming forward. Then he realized that he was in the wrong. Now, if you meditate with a group and he has these fears, then you are actually helping that man to break through those fears. See, that's why I say that first. Well, this is the thing. You helping the man to break it because it will start crowding in on him now. There was a boy who met a yogi, and the yogi was fasting for a long time, and he handed the yogi a bucket of quicklime and told him it was clabbered milk. The yogi didn't refuse it, he drank it and repeated the holy name. Now, normally quicklime would kill you instantly. So the boy cried out, help yogi, I'm dying. He said, scoffer, didn't you know your life and mine are one? You heal, go and don't do it no more. But the same thing had happened. When the man tried to parrot the consciousness of that initiate in Houston, he was thrown back into his body. He did it again. And the man followed the man to his house and he did it and he was thrown back. Now, when is he going to learn? He had to learn the hard way. So when he came the day, which was the Sunday, and sat down in the room, and 5 minutes he was out. The only way you're going to teach this man a lesson is let him face his karma once and for all. You pile the whole thing in his head, bust the bottle, and let it run out, you know? So here, buddy, wake up. Where are you? What are you doing to yourself? Because they don't realize. They have the best of intentions, but they don't realize. Now, the man is very serious about the initiation because he realized what he has done. That he needs to clean up too. He couldn't initiate a person like that immediately because there's too much things that he had to work out. Equally true if you're in this place and with this group of people and you're placed there for a reason. With the best of his intention, that he knows how, you're not trying to harm him, but maybe he has to face certain things about himself. And that's why you're there, and that's why the holy name is in you. Now, you don't have to trade anything for anything else because the proof is in the pudding. You know? Yes? The pronunciation will make any difference as long as you are thinking of it and recycling it in your consciousness. There was a woman who didn't know a certain psalm, and all that she could remember in that psalm was feathers. He will covered you in his feathers, something like that. There's a psalm. Well, she was escaping the Gestapo in Germany this last war, and she was in the train, and they were searching every train for Jewish people. And she was Jewish as she could look. And all she could remember that psalm, fetter. They walked past her and didn't even know she was existing there. Right. Yeah.
And right in Dallas, Texas, this woman that agreed with this psalm was an alcoholic husband. She had been off the drink for quite a long while. She got kind of lax and using the psalm. Came home one day after working on it for a girl's evening. She'd gotten him ahead of her and started drinking. And he drank and he beat her up. Came in through the door and he immediately jumped on and started beating her up and groceries.
That's why our chickens are
good as well. Yeah, we know a woman that knew that.
You don't have to say it right, as long as you got the intent. They'll come to lift to you face it. You see, don't talk because I repeat the holy name is God. Lots of them come too. If 3-4 minutes they go away.
That's how you burn up the karma.
That's how you burn the karma out. Because they've got to come to the surface, you see. Mm-hmm. And the holy name, this science is a two-way thing. It expands your consciousness and brings up the karma and burns them out. So you do. It comes up. But it can't stay there longer than 5 minutes. 5 minutes is just because of the five senses. See, you incur it through your five senses. That's why it can't stay longer than 5 minutes. If it stays longer than 5 minutes, rest assured he's gone in the other realm already. So somebody's beyond the five senses. So you have to repeat it for 5 minutes to be certain that it's not a hallucination of the senses. Or what you call some feedback or playback from your five senses. So you have to keep at it. Keep going like the woman. Feathers. The important thing is to be certain that you can master it because you're meditating and let's say an experience comes up. I've seen this one time. Very beautiful form came into my consciousness one time, meditating. Beautiful music and beautiful odor. I'm not fooled so easy. Maybe just keep repeating the holy name. 5 minutes is gone. Another one took its place. 5 minutes of that went too. Another one took its place. After an hour, each one taking its place, you know your words are burning up. There comes a time, they don't come no more because there's nothing to come, it's exhausted. Well, had a wonderful meditation after a long one. But you, inside, they're coming inside, and sometimes they come outside too. Yogananda said this. I have a tape on that, that is called How to See the Christ Without Fear. See the Christ with your naked eyes. See him inside you first. Keep repeating the name, then till he comes out and stands in the room. And then to the point where he talks to you, and to the point where you let you touch him. But he has to stand the test of 5 minutes all the way through. Because if it goes away after 5 minutes, then it's not the real Christ. And masters will all tell you the same thing. Even Yogananda says, if I come and you see me, test me because I ain't real, till you put it to the test. Now, Yogananda didn't want to be deceived by Yogeshwar. He read the autobiography of a yogi. Yogeshwar came to him before he died. You remember when he was a young boy, before he died, he came in the room, and he thought that was an apparition. And he says, hey, wait a minute, am I kidding myself? You were an apparition. He says, no, I'm flesh and blood. He says, feel. All right. How do he know it's his flesh and blood? He gave him the experience, then he told him what will happen. He says, I'll meet you at the train, and I'll be walking behind a boy, and you'll recognize me. Then he head to the railway station immediately after the experience, and there he was, the train had just arrived, and he was coming out of the train, and the little boy was walking in front of him. Now, later on, when he resurrected to Yogananda, he still had to test him. But this time Yogananda didn't run and bout him or put his arm around and really give him one of those bear hugs. And he said, please let go, man, you're squeezing too hard. So we know that they're talking of tangible things because all of us would be fooled if that was what it was.
And it promised me the most tremendous power, the most delightful feeling and ability. But it wanted to touch the solar plexus. And I was sort of bedazzled, you know, Murphy, what's going on here? You know, you're thrilled to be having some sort of experience. And all of a sudden, wham, it hit me. Masters don't come to you this way. And I said, this must not be a master. You know, myself, I just sat and rolled up right and said, this must not be a master. And immediately the thought came to me, if you give into this, it will take you 100 lifetimes to get back to where you are now. And you know what I started doing? I didn't know any holy names like that, but I said, God meant man to be free. God help me. I just shouted, Jesus meant man to be free. Jesus, help me. Holy Spirit meant man to be free. Holy Spirit, help me. I was just sitting there springing right on down every mat that I heard of Buddha, Jesus. Three said, was Bobby, you every one of them when I got to life and then found them.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something that was really shaped up to me. Can't imagine it. How? But I was told, if you give into this, it will take you 100 lifetimes to get back to where you are.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
If you accept the fact that there's a form ones that touch the solar plexus, or allow them to touch the solar plexus, that means giving in.
What would it do to you?
It'll draw the ectoplasm out and use it. That's how people become mediums. All mediums have what is called a psychic leak. Their ectoplasm is drained off, and therefore the entities use that as food. Because that's how they're tired after they come out of a trance. Why is this a medium or a person who goes into that state so tired or depleted? Because the ectoplasm is being drained off as food. You see, the entity does not want to reincarnate to face the obligation of going through the physical birth of the womb. Therefore, they stow away as pirates or hijack the ectoplasm with all types of alluring. They offer you all type of wonderful powers in place of it. That is to avoid their facing reincarnation. Now, they have tremendous, wonderful philosophy. They can talk of a good God. It's very hard to show you a good God. All right. That's very good for them, though. I got to give them credit. They really can do it. Well, you're never going to realize it.
You pay the price. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, they're paying for that, but you see, they don't know that because, you see, there's something which they don't know about being freed from the invocationary rights of the disembodied spirits. They'll never learn that in books because that does not exist in books. Unless a person is an initiate, only an initiate knows that. See, a master can free you from invocationary rights. That entities cannot use your body even after you die or even when you're alive. There is no way for a disembodied spirit to use you. That's one of the rights or laws. That's why a master could not come into a human body and talk to any medium. You see, that particular principle exists. Now, for instance, let's say someone is a medium and has entities using the body. A master now can come along out of compassion or grace and cut off that situation and weld it back. And just there's no way that an entity can enter that person no more. Entity can enter that person no more. You see? That's what they call freedom from the invocatory rights. Being invoked by the... A medium has to invoke, by certain principles, the disembodied spirit to come in. And that's to invite them in to use the body. Now, once they get entrance, then they use the ectoplasm because they have to use ectoplasm to survive. It's food for them. What food is for the human body? The ectoplasm is food for the disembodied spirit because the disembodied spirit does not surrender its identity to take on a human form. Now, every master takes a human form. Whenever he comes into this world, regardless of how much pain he has to go through to live it out in terms of being a master, he does come in the world, he meets you at a human level and talks to you at a human level and gives you the simple techniques. The techniques are what we call the holy breath, the name and seeing the light. And that's it. But he comes and does it and live it to show you that this is what it is. Now, he would never use you in any way from your ectoplasm to give you a message. So when somebody says they're getting a message from this person, that message, you got to be wonder first if that person is really getting a true message or getting some feedback from some level. And your own soul seems to guard you or protect you in a strange way when you hear these things because it's telling you inside if it's true or not. You have your own built-in protective measure.
Some of these disembodied spirits up, they gain a lot of power. So when they go out of the physical body, and the time comes they should reincarnate, they know they're going to have some wicked karma to face, and they don't want to face it. And they have learned how to feed off of this extra.
And that's what you call it, the book.
In that realm where they don't, you know, and put off a little longer, and you guys into the physical body, so they don't have to come probably a terribly disfigured body.
Oh yes, the,
but
yes.
As long as they can find people,
right, as long as right, they can feed on the seeds, because you see that's what you have is called a dibbuk. A dibbuk is that type of entity that feeds on another body and uses his body. Well, you see the very highest form of dibbuk is being written about. Like some Rampa's books. It's all the works of the book. D-I-B-B-U-K. These are what you call the books.
And he's just automatically manifesting that
thing. Yes, he has taken the life of the other person, and that person forfeited his life with that body, and he's using that body now to be the book in it.
So that he doesn't have to go through
the right.
He's avoiding
certain karma. He's avoiding karma.
Oh,
well, it's like a zombie.
But taking the body and not going through the birth process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's not, then doesn't have the karma involved.
Oh, he's got all the karma. He's got all that, everything more.
What's he avoiding, though, in the birth process by avoiding that?
He's avoiding the fact that his karma may provide for him a body that is actually impractical for him to live in.
Oh.
The book system is one of the oldest ways, and actually, if you go into some of your Hebrew writings, you hear a great deal with the books.
The Egyptians
did it too. These are what you call stories of the spiritual body. You don't want to face the karmic debt, because they don't want to lose the power that they have. Now you have another problem, and you come into this particular study. When an entity gives you his wisdom from the other realm, and he's not realized, he's giving you wisdom so that you may earn a fame and recognition in a physical body. You realize that? Well, all right, here you are one day, an ordinary person. You don't have no realization. Well, a person doesn't have anything in this realm. She doesn't have no recognition in this realm. And all of a sudden she gets these experiences being given by these entities of the other realm who doesn't want to come back in the body. She's already lost two things. One, she lost her own willpower to theirs, because they're using her now to come true. That's number one. The second thing is that she's going to gain the physical prestige and recognition which she craved along to be somebody of importance. Now she has to pay that price. When she dies, she becomes the slave of those entities that she used. And there is no way to break the invocatory rights of that unless you are a master. In another realm, she is their slave. She has to be their slave because, yes, in this realm, they are her slaves while she's in the physical body. They have to give her what she wants. They are serving her to keep her status quo as she is because she did not have a status quo. Now, when she passes on, it's just the law of karma. She has to reverse her position now. So she has to serve them on this, he or she. Now, only a master can break that. There's just no way that he could break that. And God is not going to interfere. God has set his laws up already. This is what it is. Ouch. No, you're not going to hear of it, and you're not going to read about it, because it's not going to be in books. You see, anytime you run across a poltergeist, you're always going to run across a child. So what have we got in a child? We got a tremendous distorted feedback. So all his psychic forces are working in a distorted way. Clear? You'll always find those two and are afraid. And whenever they come in the room, things happen. Because their fear has built at the point they've been hurt. And they don't want to be left alone. No, it's kinetic energy they're using. They don't invite anything. The poor guys, there's not another entity working on them. No, it's their own kinetic energy. Now, telekinesis is objects moving across the room by the power of the mind. And the child, he doesn't have a control. It's a feedback in which his mechanism, his chakras are scattering all the telekinetic energy, so everything starts flying around the room. Well, that's what the parapsychologist has got to work out. Yes, an initiate can do something too, but you've got to be asked. The kid has to be processed. It takes training to do it. Oh, yes, as a ground, but the thing is this, there's something, you see, it's a matter of how you to correct the particular chakra that's triggering off the telekinetic energy. And you have to process the challenge. Then you have to pinpoint which child, you see, is in the room. Now, there has to be some shock in that child's life that would trigger that situation. And it's a matter of asking the child, before the thing began to happen in his life, what was his frame of mind at the time. what great disappointment did he have at the time before it began to happen? You have to establish that degree of shock, and the color of the shock is very simple to establish. After you know that, then you can recycle it. The child can tell you where the father or the mother disappointed or promised it something or did something and caused it to go into that state of shock or disappointment. And then this begins to fire off itself. Now, it'll expend itself. It has a certain period where it'll run itself out. So the psychiatrist or the parapsychologist can experiment around for a long time. In the meantime, not getting anywhere, and then it'll run out its course. That means it'll peter out like a firecracker. Everything will splutter out and it'll stop after you go to past a certain stage. It's only happening within a certain time, then it will shift. No, you have to see the person. You can't do it by absentee. It has to be. Well, there must be something that your neighbor must have done to him. Well, at what age were the parents divorced, and what age was the boy when this? Well, these are the things you have to establish. What shock that registers so traumatic on the ganglia? And how old was the boy? Then we have what is called a feedback, a magnetic feedback. Because telekinesis is distorted magnetism. The objects are flying around the room in the boy's presence. He has the two things attract each other, or two things, opposite things attract each other. And similar things reject each other. How does magnetism work? Opposites attract, and likes repel. So what does a poltergeist do when he comes in the room? Well, people call people poltergeists so fast they don't even know what happens in the presence of a poltergeist. So why do you label the person a poltergeist if they don't even know what happens in a poltergeist presence? Wait a minute, let's find out one thing. If the boy is in the room, what happens in the room when the boy is there? A thing can't move unless it's a magnetic field. And if it's a distorted magnetic field, it either can attract or repel. It's just that simple about it. This will either go that way or it will come flying into the boy. If it comes flying into the boy from the wall, flying towards him, then he's the action of the magnetic field is pulling it. If it's flying away from him, then he's repelling it. So the degree of shock, the degree of shock in which the boy is in is triggering off that particular telekinetic action. The doctor can play around as long as he wants till that thing peters out, then there's nothing for him to measure. Now, once we establish what degree of shock the boy is in, automatically we know it had to be with some parent involved with the shock to cause this ganglia to go off. So either to repel or attract. The boy can't be in that state because it's not an entity. Poltergeist means a distortion in polarity. There's no little imp coming along and playing games. That's why I said lots of things that the initiated learn is not going to learn in books, because they're not supposed to know in the public.
Would be
a structure built can, by its own magnetic positions, become a firing agent. That it doesn't need a human being in there. The moment a human being comes in, his body magnetism helps to speed it up. But you can take a structure and create it and have what is called poltergeistic action or the poltergeist syndrome. That is, objects will fly around, but take away a human being from that room, nothing will fly around. As soon as the human being comes into the orbit of that room, it fires, it starts firing, because his magnetic field is starting to trigger it. Otherwise, if you leave the building there, it's not going to do anything. Yet the very structure can be so inadvertently put together, not that they consciously were aware when they put it together, but it so aligned up itself in a strange way. I can take a piece of rod and hold it and hit it with a hammer in a certain angle and it becomes a magnet. And I don't have to magnetize it. We're dealing with magnetism. It's the angle in which I put that rod in relation to the pole and hit it with a hammer. That rod will magnetize, will pick up objects, drawing it or kicking it away. Now this is a natural magnetic principle, let alone if you set certain objects. Now why is the pyramid at 1/3 degree up with the preserved objects? It's because that particular angle is where it will do it. It's all magnetism. But these are very subtle laws of magnetism at work. So the building itself, when it was constructed, could inadvertently line up itself in such a way that it have this particular action. And when a human being comes within it, it starts to magnify it. But I don't know of any poltergeist being an entity running around playing games. I know it's a distorted magnetism. That's why it will peter out. And if you take that building and bore a hole in the center of the roof, just one hole, that breaks the magnetism. Now if this house is haunted, you can change the magnetic field by breaking out a wall in it. Then the haunted, the individual who's supposed to haunt it don't come back, because you're altering the magnetic field that pulls him. So it's by understanding the magnetic principle, you can alter it.
I'm just familiar with the fact that some people can cause the fire to flare up. A lot of companies have to test people. Mm-hmm. First they thought,
or arsonist,
but
right. All right. Okay, everybody's initiates now. How many of you can wear your watches? Because your body is altering its magnetic field till it gets back to normal, then you can wear it.
Huh?
Because the magnetic field is altering itself to bring you to another frequency, and until your body is set in proper frequency, everything that is related in the magnetic field is going to shut off gradually. It'll come back as soon as the body lines itself up. There's a distortion in the magnetic field in the body. Well, same thing, because it lines itself back up. It's magnetism. Now, you take, for instance, now, all right, here's where the astrological bracelet comes in, or the biomagnetic wave trap comes in. A person, body is working properly magnetically, and the moment they put that on, this starts lining up the magnetic field in their body. Then objects that would not work properly in them, like a watch, it will start lining up itself for the first time. If they were working very good before, and the moment they put on one and they get initiated, it starts shutting off. It stops. Till that body lines itself up magnetically, then it'll come back. Because there is an overload in some way in that field force, and it has to be corrected. So when we're coming down to the poltergeist, I don't know of any poltergeist being a spirit, or no distorted magnetic field that can be corrected. because we're dealing with a very subtle magnetic principle. Yes. The goal, the frequency of the goal or the vibration is exactly the frequency of the skin. So you have to have goal there because you have to have the same frequency as the skin. The silver is the frequency of the blood. And the copper is the frequency of the magnetic transmission. So once they're locked in together as a unit, then you have a magnetic field built up because they're relating to your body. So you have these same vibrations in your body that set up the magnetic field. Now, coral is a stone or substance that grows in the ocean and is affected by the movement of tides. So naturally, you have the same identical thing occurring in the tidal movement of the bloodstream. And at the same time, the moon is responsible for tidal movement. So you find a coral resonates in the frequency of the moon, and since it's in a liquid solution, already growing in a liquid solution, when it's in contact with a human body, it has exactly the same magnetic relationship like if it was in the ocean, affected by the tides. Now your own birthstone has a specific frequency based upon the time cycle when you took the first breath, because that is based on the breath. So when that is set up, you have a particular frequency now that is relating to every breath you take. So it has to resonate in relation to the breath. Now the three major metals that are used are gold, silver, and copper. Well, there are two other metals that go along, is silver with tin and lead. These are two other metals that are used, and they are alloys in making anything that fuses anything, the lead and the tin. So you have that as a composite. You can make a bracelet out of lead and silver all by itself, and that's for a specific purpose. But when you're using it for the general control of the mechanism, then you have to have one that is lined up with the body as it sets. From the gold, the silver, and the copper.
What is the silver?
Silver is like your blood. Well, that's a specific disease. For instance, you had a disease of the kidney coming up in, say, 28 days from now. Before it starts to come up, you'd strap on a bracelet made of silver and lead to offset the action of the kidneys, to start the recycling of the kidneys. In the case of Yogananda, his kidneys were going to go bad on him. And his teacher told him to get himself one out of lead and silver. And when you make a bracelet out of lead and silver, and each one's got to be over an ounce, it's a pretty heavy thing to wear, let alone the lead. Oh yes, when I get back to Pala, I'll be making it in the next the full moon in February. It has to be made in the moon, and it's not so easy. People think it's just to twist some wires together. Everybody's name has a musical note, and it's got to be set to the musical note and tone and consciousness. And the metal has got to be able to feel that metal. So you can't use too much mechanical energy. You've got to use your hand a lot. I don't know the birth date. No, I don't need the hour. I need your birth date, and I need your name. So I don't need the time.
It doesn't hurt to have your time.
It doesn't hurt to have the
time,
but... That's your question. See, each name has certain musical notes. That's providing the person has that specific problem. Well, you see, in the case of paralysis of the leg, there's another type of material they use. Each one, certain diseases have certain metals they relate to. Doctors are soon now going to find out how to create tinctures of the material to make a medicine.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
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 The homeopaths were using it for centuries. And you see, now we know that if the, let's say you take a piece of material that has no therapeutic value, absolutely no therapeutic value, you can't use it. There's no way to take it. And then if you titrate it, that's if they grind it and grind it and grind it so many thousands and thousands of revolutions till it reaches what is called a different frequency in the atomic scale. One tincture of that has tremendous therapeutic action now. They cannot understand this phenomenon. What was once not therapeutic suddenly becomes therapeutic. That's why it's grounded now. Atomic ash, which ARE makes from carbon ash, is a titrated process. It's only made titrated by a mechanical process. Instead of hand doing it in a pestle with a mortar, this is done in a mechanical machine, grinding the arc, the carbon ash, and it's coming out to produce this thing. And it'll work with the same thing to affect certain therapeutic actions. Well, it works similar like a ferret. You ever heard of a ferret? You know what a ferret is? How does how do you think it kills his enemy? Well, a ferret don't bite his enemy. A ferret will hiss, and the ultrasonic frequency of his hiss will kill his opponent. Because the frequency he sets up would kill him. That's what is called ferreting. So it will hiss, and wherever the creature is that he's going to kill, that frequency will go and knock him out. It's just ultrasonic. It's what you call ultrasonic detection. And it will knock it out. Now, homeopathy is something similar like that. It'll take a substance that has no therapeutic value right now, work through a titrated process, and produce a therapeutic action. It's the same principle. Yeah. Yes. Not necessarily. Knowledge can come to you from your higher self, and that has to come from some other entity. When an entity comes to you and talks to you, or try to use your body, put you in a mediumistic trance, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about that.
Eventually, when you get through your conditioning, you get really contact the master, raise yourself to their level of consciousness, and this is why you need a living master. His obligation is to take you through all these realms and bring everything to you, and you're under his protection. Nothing can harm you. And all depends on who your master is.
The thing is, once you have the holy name as an initiate, anytime you're in doubt of what you're doing, you apply that holy name. That is your key. All right, you know to drive a car, right? Now let me take away your key. How you can go home? The key is the thing. You know to drive. There's no doubt that you don't know to drive, but you still need that key to put it in the ignition to turn it over. So you're given the key to go in there, you're given the instructions of what to look for. So it's not necessarily my body. The thing is that you have the key to work with. Now, I can give you the instructions, but if you don't use the key, what good is it? So you have the keys. And you go inside there, you meditate, and if you're in doubt, you test it. So don't take no chances or something. It's one thing my wife will tell you when she was studying to be a chiropractor. A doctor gave a demonstration, a urinalysis test. Did I tell you that?
Starting out, you know, you learn the object you're going to work with, and you exact procedure, you watch him, you do the same thing, so here we all turn up with our urine specimen, you know, check, you're finally going to get checked. Well, you know, there's the visual test, you examine, ready to check the taste and the color and so on and all, and there's a certain odor. And so then he reaches in, he puts his finger in, and then he does like this. You're supposed to do that too.
That's what you call the oral test.
So I stuck my finger in and did like a Margaret!
You mean you do that?
Did y'all see what I did? Huh? Stick the finger right out. With most of them, they didn't see that.
But this is what the professor did, you see. And everybody, well, in their mind, they can build up a whole big thing. But it's observation to the end. Don't even trust the last action. But this is what we're trying to point out. In the meditative life, you can't afford to drift around. You can't wander. Otherwise, you become mediumistic.
Well, you've heard of hot wire in a car. Do you know what that is? Yeah. But you can't lock up your car if you don't have your keys, do you? That whatever's in that car can't be protected. Now, the mediumistic thing is sort of like hot wire. You can do certain things, but you don't have any protection. You have valuables in the car or anything like that. That's not a sort of a crude illustration.
No, you are protected as an initiate, and you have the holy name. That's why Jesus says, hallowed be thy name, if you use it. Now, if you're hungry, eat. If you're not hungry, don't eat. Equally true in this science, if you're on the path going inwards and you have the key, check everything. Because these are some things you have to do for yourself. And anything that comes there, you check. To be certain, it's not a manufacturing of your own mind. And a genuine experience will always be a genuine experience. How would you know the difference if you took everything for granted inside you? You wouldn't know if you arrive at God realization. If you just wish for it. The scriptures don't say, as a man think he knows God, be thou silent and think that I am God. He says, be thou silent and know that I am God. Now, thinking is computing. Knowing is feeling and testing. You got to feel this thing and test it. That's a big difference than thinking. Thinking, you'll still be computing in your mind. And God is not something that you can think of, because that's the first thing the Chinese get rid of. Stop thinking, and then Zen begins. That's where they use the word Zen or Zenith. When you reach the zenith of thinking, then the experience of Satori will occur. So when you stop to think about God, then this inner force field comes to the surface. You begin to know.
Not when you stop to think, but when you stop thinking.
Stop thinking.
Somehow, let's say,
this is someone that you have a feeling of love for, and you want to open your consciousness to teaching, so then you can do this test for 5 minutes. But sometimes 5 minutes can seem like an hour, or an hour can be like 5 minutes.
Don't be impatient. You got all eternity to find out. Man, I'd rather be sure than step in a quicksand, because once you step in quicksand, you can't come out. Ain't nobody gonna pull you out.
Yeah,